This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So Dogen Zenji, lineage founder in the 13th century in Japan, said a lot about Zen practice and wrote a lot about Zen practice. We could say that the 95 chapters of the Shobogenzo, the true Dharma Eye treasury, are all expounding the practice of and realization of Zazen. They're all pointing to the understanding of Zazen. But within Dogen's teachings, there's certain Shobogenzo chapters and other teachings that are really specifically about sitting meditation, Zazen. A lot of teaching is just about the mind of Zen in general. But there's some teachings that are like Zazen instructions for actual sitting practice. And there's not that many that, you know, really point directly to this specific matter of sitting. So apparently in 1959, someone in the Soto school decided they should collect together Dogen's main teachings on the specifics of sitting Zen, what we call Zazen, like sitting silently and still in samadhi. So there's this collection called Ryoso Daishi Zazen Seiten, translated as the two ancestors. That's Soto lingo for Dogen and Keizan are called Ryoso, both ancestors. They're kind of like, sometimes it'd be the father and mother of Soto Zen, the sun and the moon, the co-founders, Ryoso Daishi, the great teachers who are the two ancestors, Zazen, sacred texts, Seiten. So this is the, somebody decided to compile the main teachings about Zazen from these two ancestors. And this source includes Fukan Zazengi, maybe even said to be the central text expounding the virtues and methods of Zazen. Kind of, Fukan Zazengi means the universal instructions for the manner of sitting Zen. And I think many people know the Fukan Zazengi at San Francisco Zen Center. It's chanted during service sometimes. It's a little bit long. In Japan, it's one of the few texts by Dogen it's actually recited in the Zendo, traditionally recited at the last period of Zazen, during Zazen, and in the evening in the monasteries. It's often recited very slowly as a kind of instruction for Zazen during Zazen, like every day. So that's one of them, a wonderful, amazing text that talks in detail about the posture and the mind of Zazen. And another essay besides Fukan Zazengi is Zazengi, Shobogenzo Zazengi, which is almost the same as Fukan Zazengi. It's a little bit shorter, and it's part of the Shobogenzo collection. These are the texts of Dogen specifically about Zazen. Bendo wa, the treatise on the wholehearted practice of the way, the central teaching of which is called Jijyu Zamai, self-enjoyment samadhi, another name for Zazen. And a series of questions and answers about Zazen. And that's another very wonderful text. The Gakudo Yojinshu, the guidelines for studying the way, has some teachings about the practice of Zazen specifically. Interestingly, Fukan Zazengi, Bendo wa, and Gakudo Yojinshu were all written very early on by Dogen, like, you know, his first years of trying to write about Zazen. His first years trying to write anything, he was actually felt like the first thing to talk about is Zazen. And so he wrote these treatises, and they still are amongst the most popular and well-known important teachings of Dogen. Then a little bit later on, maybe 10 years after these texts, he wrote a little bit more. Dogen revised the Fukan Zazengi, kind of edited it and spiffed it up a little bit. And he also wrote a text called Zazen Shin, which means the acupuncture needle of Zazen. Also one of the, a little more poetic, philosophical, long treatise on Zazen based on some Zen koan stories about Zazen. And a couple years after that, Dogen wrote Zamai o Zamai, the samadhi that is king of samadhis. So together, these six texts are considered Dogen's main writings about Zazen. And they all are quite, they all point in a different direction towards some aspects of Zazen. So for a really well-rounded portrait of Dogen's take on Zazen, it's nice to read all of these teachings. I think of all of them, maybe Fukan Zazengi is the most classic and really great instructions. And we'll, talk on that in days to come, because there's some relationship between that teaching and this one of Zamai o Zamai. Zazen Shin is also quite wonderful. They all are, and they're all kind of different. But this is when we're taking up this Shin, Zamai o Zamai. King of Samadhis, Samadhi is one of the six main treatises on Zazen practice by Dogen. And it's short and sweet, It's only a couple of pages. Some of the others are quite long. Not included in this, also included in this connection by Keizan, the two texts by Keizan, co-founder of Soto Zen in Japan, are called Zazen Yojinki, the guidelines for Zazen, which is very much kind of based on Dogen's Fukan Zazenki, but it elaborates a little bit more, and it's also a beautiful text. And San Kon Zazen Setsu by Keizan is like three types of Zazen practitioners, or three types of Zazen, kind of a little different than my three types I mentioned this morning. But related, maybe. So in addition to this collection of Zazen manuals or treatises on Zazen, Dogen also has some other samadhi essays. He's got one called Taiin Zamai, or the ocean seal, the ocean mudra samadhi, and an essay called Jisho Zamai, or self-verification samadhi. I think these are the three that have samadhi in their title: the ocean seal samadhi, the self-verification samadhi, and the king of samadhis, samadhi. And then Bendoa, as I mentioned, wholehearted way talk is based around Jiju Zamai, or self-enjoyment samadhi. So there's four names of samadhis that Dogen particularly comments on, and there's probably others woven into his essays as well. Another important samadhi text in our lineage is Chinese ancestor Dumchan's Hokyo Zamai, jewel mirror samadhi, that we recite during service sometimes. All these names, kind of beautiful names for different samadhis, are part of the Mahayana tradition, emphasizing different aspects of the unification of mind. So this week we're looking at this Mai Ozamai. If you'd like to at some point study these other Zazen treatises of Dogen, I have given previous Genzawa Sesshins and series of talks on Fukan Zazengi, Bendowa, and Zazen Shin and Zazen Yojinki. You can listen on my website for commentaries. So, Zamai. Oh, Zamai. As I mentioned, is Zamai is just the transliteration of Samadhi, and O is the Japanese for king or sovereign. So, Samadhi, that is king of samadhis, or king of samadhis, samadhi. In Sanskrit, in the Prajnaparamita sutras, particularly the large sutra of perfect wisdom at the very beginning, Shakyamuni Buddha, Buddha enters the samadhi raja, samadhi, the king of samadhis, samadhi. And that's the origin of the title of this essay of Dogen. So Dogen taught this at kind of very prolific time in his writing of the Shobogenzo in 1242. He was 42 years old. And he had just moved from Kyoto to Echizen Province, modern Fukui Ken, on the west coast of Japan, where a donor just offered the land for a Heiji monastery, and it was being built, which of course took a while. And while it was being built, Dogen and this small group of monks were living in this nearby hermitage. And that's where Dogen taught this King of Samadhi. He begins. To sit cross-legged is to take a leap straight away, transcending the entire world, and define oneself within the exceedingly sublime quarters of the Buddhas and ancestors. Dogen usually likes to begin in an enthusiastic and exalted kind of way, saying that the topic of today's talk is the essence of the entire Buddha Dharma. And each one is. So here he's setting it up as instead of talking about the mind of spacious awareness or something like that, here he's describing Zazen as sitting cross-legged. That's the practice that's exceedingly sublime. And he continues to talk about cross-legged sitting in Japanese, keikafuza, which is an ancient way of translating the Sanskrit paryanka, which is this cross-legged posture. I think this means cross-legged posture, which we also know by its other Sanskrit terms, Padmasana, the lotus posture, and Vajrasana, the Vajra posture, or the indestructible, unshakable posture. Maybe the use of a bit more in Vajrayana, but these are all the same. Cross-legged posture. Keikafuza. Kei in Japanese means something like kind of tied or bound. And kafu, both characters mean cross-leg. And za is, of course, sitting, as in zazen. Keikafuza is like kind of bound or tied up, cross-legged sitting. So sometimes we say full lotus sitting, sometimes people translate it as, because there is another term in Japanese, hankafuza, and han means half. So we have this term half lotus in English, and I think it's a translation of hankafuza, half cross-legged sitting. And that means with one leg resting on the opposite thigh is half, so-called half lotus, hankafuza sitting, and then if the opposite leg is put on the opposite side, thigh, so they're both crossed. That's keikafuza. So, if we're strictly speaking, it seems like people interpret keikafuza as with both legs crossed on top of each other, so-called full lotus. I think it could also be interpreted as just any cross-legged sitting. And including what we call Burmese style with both lower legs kind of parallel on the cushion, but neither neither foot rests on either thigh. And there's so-called quarter lotus, where the one foot with like the toes rests in the kind of knee, inside the knee of the other leg. So not up on the, up high on the thigh, but kind of in the knee. All these variations of sitting cross-legged. I think the important thing with cross-legged meditation is that generally we want both our knees to be resting on a cushion, not to, to be supported as opposed to hanging in the air. So sometimes it's said that if you cross your legs and your hips aren't quite flexible enough to have your knees come rest on the cushion and they're hanging, it's nice to put kind of support cushion under the knee. So you have this tripod of support with the two knees and your bottom, stable foundation for sitting. So even though Dogen may be promoting here full lotus sitting with both feet up on the thighs, we could also say that this Keika Fuza cross-legged sitting is referring to the entire meditation posture. It's just an abbreviated form for the posture of Zazen is called cross-legged sitting. I think that's another way to understand it. And even if it's literally cross-legged or full cross-legged sitting, in one translation of this essay by Kaz Tanahashi and Zoketsu Norman Fisher, they translate it quite provocatively, I think, and liberally and quite wonderfully, and maybe controversially. They translate it, instead of cross-legged sitting, as the posture of meditation. This is making Dogen's teaching more accessible, especially to Westerners who might be sitting in all kinds of different postures. So some might say, wait a second, you're taking the central point of this essay, which is full cross-legged sitting as the essence of awakening, and just saying the meditation posture. Some might say, that's too liberal a translation. And some might say, that's amazing that you guys were so courageous to translate this that way, because that's actually what Dogen's pointing at. Is he's not trying to be dogmatic about some specific posture, but he is really emphasizing the body of Zazen, the bodily posture of Zazen. So that's the only translation I've seen that goes that far. And all throughout this essay, this term Keika Fuza is coming up, and every time they translate it as the posture of meditation. The meditation posture instead of cross-legged sitting. So I think both ways are good. It's good to consider both ways of both interpretations. Now, I know not everybody probably is sitting in full lotus posture. And this does not mean that you are don't have a part in Dogen's practice of Zazen if you can't sit that way. I don't think it means that. As long as you have a meditation posture, we do actually need that part. My feeling is that what we do with our legs in Zazen is not the most essential thing. The upper body of Zazen, I feel like, is more important in the posture. And you can arrange your legs in so many different ways and still have the exact same upper body posture. Sitting on a chair, usually it's recommended like kind of the front edge of the chair. Kneeling, seiza, we call, on the bench or on a cushion or on your heels, Upper body can be the same. All these variations of cross-legged sitting I mentioned. It's basically creating a stable foundation of the legs to support the upper body. And we might say, well, what's the big deal about Kekafusa, tied up, bound, cross-legged posture? It does seem like this full lotus posture, which you see like in Buddha statues and paintings, images going way, way back, probably arose before the Buddha's time in 500 BC. I think it's a really ancient yogic posture to cross these two legs on top of each other this way. It's kind of a little bit unusual posture. People wouldn't just naturally relax in that kind of posture, I don't think. But as a meditation posture, I think it's very ancient. And we know it's at least 2,500 years old, right? This posture, at least to the Buddha's time, but probably earlier. And it's lasted up to modern America. So that in itself is like, says something about this cross-legged posture. That's something kind of amazing, even if there's no particular virtues of it, just the fact that it continues in all these schools of Buddhism and other, especially Indian traditions and Asian traditions of meditation. So maybe there's something to it, and the rest of the posture too. So once we have our legs arranged in some stable foundation that we can keep and hold without moving for a while, for like 4 minutes or more. We want that kind of foundation. Then we can arrange the upper body. So I think if you sit in full lotus posture, but you can only sit 5 minutes, and every 5 minutes you have to adjust, then I wouldn't recommend it. I think we want a posture we can maintain for 30, 40 minutes or more, ideally. Myself, when I was first starting Zen practice, even before Zen, starting some meditation practice, and I heard about this full lotus posture, I thought, well, I guess I should learn this in my early 20s. And I found it quite uncomfortable. Extremely uncomfortable for a few minutes, but after 5 minutes, pretty uncomfortable. So the way I learned it was, I would sit for like my maximum, say 5 minutes, and then I would go back to half lotus or some other posture, and then the next day I would try to add 1 minute, 6 minutes, then the next day 7 minutes. And, maybe in one's early 20s, it's the body is more flexible and it's easier to do this. But that's how I learned the full lotus posture, to the point where just gradually increasing like a minute at a time at some point. And it wasn't, I was sitting maybe a lot, or at least every day. After maybe a year, I can't quite remember. Maybe around a year or something, then I could sit 40 minutes and it was actually comfortable. I know everybody is different, but that's how it worked for me. And then I continued it, of course. And I think it's a yogic posture. It's a stretch to do the posture and to sit in the posture. I think people say, well, is there some yogic stretches I can do to develop this posture? Full lotus. And I think the best yogic stretch is the posture, over and over again. So pretty early on, it was be like, I would just like in a whole session, I'll just sit for lotus the whole time. And I still do that, but I don't know how long that will last. Although Sojin Nel Roshi, who just passed away a few months ago, in maybe his last Dharma talk at Berkeley Zen Center, I think he was 91. He was in his 90s. And usually you can't really tell how people's legs are if they're wrapped up in their robes. But he was sitting in Samway, like just in pants. And so you could see his posture. And he, at 90, 91, folded his legs up into the full lotus posture just to give a Dharma talk. I was impressed. So it's never too late. He maybe started young too. I don't know. Dogen himself says in the Fukan Zazengi, when he describes the posture in detail, he describes this full lotus posture with the right foot on the left thigh and the left foot on the right thigh. And he said, or you could sit in the half lotus with just the left foot on the right thigh. So he includes both postures in that universal instructions for Zazen. And I think in his instructions for Oryoki meals, where we eat meals in the Zendo, he says for meals, don't, I think he says, just sit half lotus. Don't, kind of the instruction is kind of don't sit full lotus. I think it's okay, but like for Dharma talks, I don't sit full lotus because they maybe go on for a long time. But so there's these cross-legged postures, and I think whatever is comfortable, but it's nice to stretch ourselves a little bit too. And then in the upper body of Zazen, ideally, if we can keep a really straight spine, you know, our lower back in just a little bit, our, you know, lifting up through the top of our head, I think is a nice way to put it, rather than like try to make the back like a board. It's more just like we're lifting up through the whole spine at the same time letting the shoulders just drop, like hanging off the spine. And then the head balanced on the shoulders. One way of talking about this sitting posture from ancient times in India, called the 7-point posture of Vairochana. Why they chose Vairochana Buddha, I don't know, but Kamalashila and other ancient Indian talking about this posture tied to the 7-point posture of Vairochana. Still, that's usually the name of it in Tibetan tradition. Talk about it. So the 7 points is nice little checklist, I think. Sometimes I'll go through 7 points at the beginning of Zazen just to like make sure I haven't forgotten anything. The 7 points of Buddha's posture are Kekabuza. You know, traditionally it would be this full lotus, but we could say cross-legged sitting, or we could arranging our legs however is comfortable, even if it's on a chair or kneeling or whatever. The legs is the first point. And then the second is the spine, upright back. Ideally we're not leaning back. If you have like a condition where you can't sit without your back supported, then of course, by all means, we use that back support. But if we can sit unsupported, this is part of the yogic element of the Zazen posture. Maybe the central one, I'd say, of all these 7 points, if I had to say, if you could just choose one, which would it be? I would say the upright spine, upright unsupported back. The third point is the shoulders, kind of not tensing up, not coming forward, but kind of resting back and relaxed a little bit back, but everything always relaxed in this posture. The fourth point is the hand mudra, Vairochana 7-point posture. That Buddha mudra, one palm resting on the other palm, thumb tips lightly touching in a circle around the abdomen. That's how the Buddha images look, Vairochana. It's also okay to put your hands on your knees. It's a kind of an alternate posture of meditation. Vairochana is 7-point posture. It's the traditional posture of Zen in the Fukan Zazengi. Let's see, that's number four. Number five is the neck. Sometimes tend to hang forward. So we lift the neck up straight, balance the head on top of the spine, the chin tucked in just a little bit. Balanced and relaxed. As Dogen Fukan Zazengi says, the ears align with the shoulders and the nose in line with the navel. In other words, we're balanced this way and we're balanced this way, upright. That's 5 points of posture. I mean, that's 4 points here. Five. That's five. Number six is the mouth closed with the tongue on the palate of the mouth. Well, I think it kind of naturally rests anyway. But maybe I'm just used to that instruction. It's nice to have the tongue rest against the roof of your mouth because it stops the saliva flow so you don't have to swallow. And the seventh point is the eyes. Open just a little bit, cast downward at an angle towards the floor. One, the legs cross-legged or some stable foundation. Two, the spine upright. Three, the shoulders relaxed and not tightening up. The hand mudra. And if you're sitting in half lotus or full lotus, in other words, with your foot is on your thigh, then it's very nice platform for the hand mudra to rest on the heel of your foot. It's the perfect place. I think Suzuki Roshi says, it's the perfect place, or you should rest your hands on your heel of your foot like that because it's the perfect place, but not just because it's convenient, but it actually is convenient. It's nice to have it. If we're not sitting with our foot on the thigh, in other words, hanka fuza or keika fuza, but in so-called Burmese posture or something else, then I would hesitate to recommend holding the hands around the abdomen with the thumb tips at the level of the navel. I think each person has to work these things out for themselves. But the problem is if your hands aren't supported on your foot a little bit, then you're holding them in space. And I think the posture was actually designed to do that. It creates kind of tension on the shoulders. So I might even, I have recommended to people if your both feet are on the floor cushion, then maybe to use like a support cushion or a zafu or something like this to support the hand mudra, kind of the cushion in your lap to hold it at the right place if you want to keep that mudra. This we're going sort of outside of tradition at this point, so I think it's experimental, but my understanding is that the Dogen actually says, right, rest the hand on the you know, your foot that's there. So you're not like stretching your shoulders. It's Ideally, it should all be restful and relaxing. The legs, spine, shoulders, the hand mudra, the neck, the mouth, tongue, and the roof, and the eyes. These are the 7 points of Vairocana. It's nice to kind of run through them at the beginning of Zazen. And I think the main variation for people probably is the legs. You can keep this, all the other 6 points of the posture may be the same, however you have your legs. And if you have to lean against the back support, you can maybe have a really straight back chair where it keeps your back upright, and then all the other points would be the same too. And if it's really uncomfortable to keep your hands in that, we say cosmic mudra, because it's the Dharma Dhatu Samadhi mudra in Sanskrit. Dharma Dhatu is kind of like the cosmos. If that's uncomfortable, then hands on the knees, I think it's also good posture. So we might say, when Dogen says here to sit cross-legged, we might say, he's really specifically saying it's, you got to tie up your legs in this full lotus. Or we could say to sit cross-legged means the 7 points of Vairochana's posture, the 7 point Vairochana posture. I could see it could mean either one. The whole posture of Zazen, the body of Zazen is emphasized as important in the Zen tradition, especially all tradition. Having practiced some in Theravada and the Vajrayana traditions, nowhere have I found such a strong emphasis on the precision of the meditation posture as in Japanese Zen, Chinese Zen. I practice in China in some Zen halls, and they're not quite so nitpicky about the details of the posture. It might be a Japanese cultural thing. It's hard to know. But for whatever reasons, it's the style of Zen is to really attend to the precision and details of the posture. And it's a wonderful gift to us. It's a lot to pay attention to, which is a good thing, to pay attention to the body in Zazen. So it's a non-discursive meditation object, this body. And also, I think there are yogic functions of this at least 2,500-year-old posture. By yogic functions, I mean kind of the mind-body connection, like the physical posture of the gross body has an effect on the subtle body. We usually don't talk about this so much in Zen tradition. I think it's there, but we just not talked about so much. It's maybe a little esoteric. It's the realm of Vajrayana. Practice is a more expanding on the practice of the subtle body. If the gross body is this physical lump of red flesh, the subtle body is the system of channels, in Sanskrit, nadi, or meridians, and Chinese medicine. They're not physical, but they're the channels through which the prana flows, the subtle energy, life energy. In Chinese, qi, I think, is very similar, if not identical, to prana. Again, you can't measure this. This is not a physical, like blood flow. This is flow of energy through invisible channels. And chakras are kind of like not so kind of condensed areas in the channels. And then bindus are like subtle life force energy that's like that prana carries through the body to keep us healthy and to keep awareness clear and fresh. And then the mind is like complete non-physical, pure awareness. So the subtle body is kind of like a connection between the gross body and the mind. In Indian yogic traditions and Vajrayana Buddhism. And I think that's all there in Zen. We just don't talk about it so much, but we emphasize the posture because that creates the, it lines up the nadi, the channels. So the prana can flow through them, course through the body and create samadhi basically. So there's something connection between this physical posture, the subtle body, which we can say we don't even need to get into because it's taken care of by the physical body and the breath and then samadhi. If we try to, you know, sit kind of like this for like an hour, like, oh, where's the samadhi? It's unlikely to develop in the same way. I think we all know this. There's a deep connection between body and presence of mind. So to sit cross-legged every time Dogen says that in his essay, we could mean the whole posture of Zazen, 7 points of Vajrayana, or just the meditation posture, being in a body. We could understand it in all these ways. So, Dogen, to sit cross-legged is to take a leap straight away, transcending the entire world and find oneself within the exceedingly sublime quarters of the Buddhas and ancestors. Just an exalted statement. You could say to sit cross-legged is to leap directly beyond all realms. It's be another way of translating here. Leap beyond the entire universe or the worlds or universe or all realms, you could translate this as. This is going to come up again in this essay, this issue of all realms. So it's this posture is leaping beyond all realms and finding oneself within exceedingly magnificent quarters or room of the Buddhas and ancestors. Buddhas and ancestors is a phrase Dogen often uses throughout all his writings. And it's just a kind of poetic way of saying Zen, the Zen tradition. Whenever you hear Buddhas and ancestors, ancestors means the lineage of Zen ancestors since the time of the Buddha. So instead of saying the Zen school or something, Dogen uses the phrase Buddhas and ancestors, or Buddha ancestors, you could also translate. Dogen has a lot of emphasis on lineage and the ancestors that have transmitted Zazen up to today. So you enter the lineage of ancestors in cross-legged sitting. Is the gist of this sentence. He goes on, to sit cross-legged is to trample over the heads of all the devil heretics and become the person within the Buddha's and ancestors' innermost precincts. A little bit dramatic. Maybe could also be translated, to sit cross-legged is to step over or over the heads of all devil heretics, is demons and those outside the way. So it's just ways we're talking about trying not to get too sectarian. I think Dogen's just praising the uniqueness of the Buddhas and the ancestors. And become a true person within the Buddhas and ancestors' innermost sanctum. Sitting cross-legged is this. It's kind of a maybe shocking statement, right? He doesn't say realization of emptiness is, we might say, I could understand that that's entering the inner precincts of the Buddhas and ancestors, just to sit cross-legged, right? He's intentionally making a provocative statement, or we could say, to sit in the meditation posture, to sit in this posture is to enter the inner sanctum of the Buddhas and ancestors. This Dharma and this alone is the way to transcend the highest reaches of Buddhas and ancestors. It's for this reason that Buddhas and ancestors practice it and never exert their efforts elsewhere. In other words, they don't do anything else but sit in the meditation posture. That's the opening paragraph of this essay, setting the stage for the rest of it. And I think that's kind of unique. All these other essays about Zazen that Dogen mentions, Fukan Zazengi sets up the posture, but it doesn't say that this posture itself is transcending the Buddhas and ancestors and is the culmination of the practice. But this essay is particularly known for making this point. It's kind of a radical statement that to sit in this posture is the whole practice. Now, some of you might know Suzuki Roshi's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. I think the first chapter in there is on posture. And I think I heard this chapter from Suzuki Roshi long before I came across this Dogen essay, but it seems to me now, in fact, as soon as I heard this Dogen essay, I thought, I think Suzuki Roshi is basing this chapter on posture in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, on this Zamai O Zamai of Dogen. It doesn't mention this essay, but see what you think. So, read a little bit from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. First, he actually talks about Keikafuza, the full lotus posture. When you first sit in the full lotus position, your left foot is on your right thigh and your right foot on your left thigh. When we cross our legs like this, even though we have a right leg and a left leg, they have become one. So Dogen doesn't say this, but I think it reminds me a little bit of the style of Dogen, who will take something very practical, like the specifics of a posture, and make it into a kind of philosophical point. And I think it's very beautiful. Suzuki Roshi says this, right? When we cross our legs one over the other like this, even though you have a right leg and a left leg, they have become one. This position expresses the oneness of duality, not two and not one. This is the most important teaching, not two and not one. Our body and mind are not two and not one. Our body and mind are both two and one, Suzuki Roshi says. So he's taking almost like the symbol of these cross legs and making it into like a teaching about non-duality, or not one, not two. Goes on, you should be sitting straight up as if you were supporting the sky with your head. This is not just form or breathing. It expresses the key point of Buddhism. It's a perfect expression of your Buddha nature. Buddha nature is like the reality of all-inclusive awareness, including body, mind, and the entire universe. We might say, actually, that everything, strictly speaking, everything perfectly expresses Buddha nature. It must. There are no exceptions. But I think Dogen says somewhere, he's talking about different Zen ancestors and, like, you know, praising certain ancestors in China. And he's saying, well, we don't say that some ancestors in the lineage are greater than others, but this ancestor was, like, really great. So maybe we could say that here too, is everything expresses Buddha nature equally, but this posture really expresses it. The key point of Buddhism, it's perfect. This posture is a perfect expression of your Buddha nature. If you want true understanding of Buddhism, you should practice this way. These forms are not a means of obtaining the right state of mind. To take this posture itself is the purpose of our practice. When you have this posture, you have the right state of mind. So there's no need to try to attain some special state. When you try to attain something, your mind starts to wander about somewhere else. Doesn't this sound like it could be kind of inspired by Shobogenzo Zamai O Zamai? Hiroshi goes on. This state of mind that exists when you sit in the right posture is itself enlightenment. In this posture, there's no need to talk about the right state of mind. You already have it. It's a kind of radical statement, I think. And I think it can be misunderstood. I think maybe a misunderstanding would be like, we just got this posture, and now just like let the mind go wild, free reign, space out all over the place, because it doesn't matter because the posture is enlightenment already. I think that would be a kind of misunderstanding. It's a subtle point, and I think it's one of the several important points of this essay of Dogen. What does it mean to say that to sit cross-legged or to sit in this posture is leaping beyond the boundaries of the Buddhas and ancestors? It's not like exactly some magical thing about a particular posture, but wholeheartedly engaging the posture that we're in, totally wholeheartedly, maybe the main point. And this point that everything in the physical world, so-called physical world, every possible experience is an expression of Buddha nature. I think underlying teaching here. Therefore, this posture completely expresses it. Two, this is something we can consider, the meaning of this radical statement and the possible misunderstandings, right? Like, forget about the mind, line up the body this way. I don't think he's saying forget about what you do with mind. But it's one type of Zazen instruction. There's many types that Dogen even offers, but here he's really emphasizing something about when the posture is just the posture completely wholeheartedly, that is a complete expression of our true nature. Now, There's a couple other places Dogen really emphasizes this kind of body, the body posture for Zazen. One of them is Zazen Shin, Shogogen and Zazen Shin, the acupuncture needle of Zazen, acupuncture needle for Zazen. You could translate it either way, meaning like this medicine, the medicine of Zazen, the cure all disease, like an acupuncture needle, or an acupuncture needle that's going right to the point of Zazen, the precise point of what it is to cure any misunderstandings about Zazen. You could interpret it either way. Acupuncture needle for to cure misunderstandings about Zazen, or just that Zazen is the acupuncture needle to cure everything. Anyway, this essay is amazing. Many points are brought up in this acupuncture needle. One of them is this kind of long story about polishing a tile to make a mirror. It's kind of famous in the halls of Zen. And without going through the whole story today, part of the story is dialogue between Nanyue and Matsu. And Nanyue says, when your cart doesn't move, do you strike the cart or do you strike the ox that pulls it? This metaphor is never explained. We're talking about Zazen. They were already talking about Zazen here. So it's a pointing out of how to practice Zazen. Usually this metaphor is understood to be talking about body and mind, the cart and the ox. And I think it's a nice way to look at this metaphor, that the cart and the ox are metaphors for body and mind in Zazen. And Nanyue is kind of admonishing Matsu for always sitting in the Zazen posture, trying to make a Buddha by sitting in Zazen. And he's kind of saying, what do you think? It's kind of the opposite point in a way, right, of what we're talking about today. Saying, what do you think just like sitting in that posture is going to make you a Buddha? Buddha is not like in posture of your body, the gist of this original story. So Nanyue is saying, if your cart doesn't move, in other words, if you're not moving towards awakening, do you strike the cart, the body, by sitting in it, by adjusting your posture to be more perfect? Or do you strike the ox that pulls the cart, which is the mind, or you could even say the understanding. Strike the understanding that's the reality, the view that actually pulls this body through the world. Strike meaning like put your attention on this ox. That's where Buddha will be realized, not in the posture. So that's the gist of this original image. Nanyue is saying, when the cart doesn't move, do you strike the cart or do you strike the ox? With the implication being, you strike the ox if the cart doesn't move, right? But Dogen, because he's Dogen, likes to take these traditional stories and reverse them, just to open our minds, really look at the other side, the opposite point of view, is a kind of one of Dogen's kind of trademark methods of writing. And so Dogen's comment on this line is, in the world, there's no method of striking the cart, but in the Buddha way, there is the practice of striking the cart. And this is the very eye of Zen study. Only Dogen Zenji could say such a thing. in the world, most people don't know how to strike the cart to make it move. It's just not going to work. But in the Buddha way, we have the method of striking the cart. You could interpret, I think, what Dogen is trying to say here is you can emphasize the body. There's many places, maybe most of the rest of Shobo Genzo is talking about striking the ox, really the understanding of reality. But here Dogen's essentially saying, in the Buddha way, you can strike the cart. In other words, attend directly to the meditation posture. He goes on, even if you realize the practice of striking the cart, it's not the same as striking the ox. Study this thoroughly. So there's a practice of attending to the body and a practice of attending to the mind or the understanding, and we can distinguish them. So this is, I think, a similar point that Dogen's making in the acupuncture needle of Zazen about striking the 7 points of Vipassana's posture to move the cart directly to awakening. Dogen has another essay called Shobo Genzo Shinjin Kudo, Body and Mind Study of the Way, where half the essay is on study of the way, the mind, and second half is study of the way with the body. Dogen says in this essay, two approaches to studying the Buddha way, with the mind and with the body. It's a long essay, so maybe a summary is to study the way with the mind is now. Mountains, rivers, earth, sun, moon, and stars are mine. At just this moment, what is it that appears directly in front of you? To study the way with mind. And to study the way with body, kind of brief summary from this essay, Dogen says, this means to study the way with your own body. It's the study of the way using this lump of red flesh, which sounds like this, you know, blood and bones, skin bag. We call a physical body. But then Dogen goes on to say, the entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body, which is an actual old Zen ancestor quote from China. The coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. So, Dogen starting to talk about the body, Dogen starts reinterpreting it as this kind of vast, all-inclusive body, not so much about the particulars of the meditation posture. Anyway, these are a few other places where Dogen is talking about the heart of Zen practice involving the body, both the vast, inconceivable body, and the, you know, lump of red flesh, specific physical body lined up in a particular posture. Maybe I could stop for now and see if you have any questions or comments, points for clarification about this beginning paragraph. anything particular about body. Taizan.
I have a question for you. One of the things that is a caution that I feel on the emphasis of the body, of course, is when giving the instruction and there's people who are physically challenged, and you know, so to read the emphasis on the importance of this form can feel kind of excluding.
Yeah.
And so as you were talking, I was wondering, might a way of working with this posture emphasis be to work with it in the same way that we have, like in sports, we visualize a certain performance or a certain way of performing this, whatever that the skill is. Do you think that might be a way of encouraging those who can't possibly attain, you know, to even being able to sit with a straight back, you know,
visualizing it, you're saying?
Yeah, like encouraging, like for instance, having something where up front it's stated that if you cannot attain to this level, you know, for obvious reasons, like you have a spinal, you know, your spine has been severed, something like that. I have a member in my group like that. That, you know, anyway,
I guess my tendency would be to translate it as Kaz and Norman did here, right? As to sit in the meditation posture is very all-inclusive. That really can include anything, any posture. And I think that was their intention. And I think we could understand, I mean, Dogen to mean that the meditation posture is the posture that you're in, and to be one with that posture is the point that Dogen's making. There's maybe some tension here between, well, does he really mean like full lotus sitting? Or does he just mean the meditation posture? And I think that those are the two ends of the spectrum. So I think the most inclusive is to, and I think it's a valid interpretation, is to just say the meditation posture. And then I would say, rather than visualizing a straighter backing, I would say just inhabit the posture that we're in completely. And you're right that many people can't sit in the 7-point posture of Vairochana. So even like lying down, for example, even then sometimes we can keep the straight spine at that point. Even if we can't keep a straight spine, of course we can it can be a meditation. All these elements don't have to be exactly like the tradition there. So I would say rather than visualizing it as the 7 points of Vairochana, I would say inhabit the posture, the meditation posture, the one we're in, the one we can do wholeheartedly, completely. Yeah. Meido.
Yeah, it a way of kind of arguing or supporting that interpretation of the sitting posture comes to me from this sort of incongruity between sitting cross-legged and leaping. It's hard to leap cross-legged. So my sense is that the incongruity there is designed to bring forward the question as to whether this posture is strictly physical.
Yes, great point. Yes, to sit cross-legged is to leap directly. Yeah, so, and yet there is a posture, a body appearing in Zazen. Whatever posture it's in, there is a posture in the human realm. And so that's, and when the posture is completely that posture, then that we could say that is leaping beyond. That's leaping beyond the posture. And the posture is completely the posture that it is, without actually wishing that it could be more like the 7 points of Virochand's posture, when it's just completely what it is with nothing lacking and nothing extra. You could say that posture leaps beyond the entire world and all realms. Yeah. Yeah. And yet I think we are exploring the physical posture, whatever it is at this point. Say, well, what about in the formless heaven realms, where there aren't any physical bodies or postures? We might say, well, that's actually going too far here. Dogen's actually talking about the embodied realm here. When the embodied realm is completely the embodied realm, it is. And Dogen is often playing with this tension of, like, he's talking about a very broad open point like the one we are, but he's framing it in the traditional imagery of the Zen tradition. So in modern times we could explain it by saying your posture just being your posture as it is leaps beyond, because Dogen likes to use the traditional language to say Keikafuza leaps beyond. Because that's his kind of style. And it leaves us with this question. And I think some kind of orthodox Soto Zen in Japan, like at a Heiji and places like this, I think they're like, you gotta like practice Dogen to the letter. And I've heard that at a Heiji, you know, these people, it's mostly these young men, but they haven't been sitting meditation before. They're coming to the monastery to learn, they have to sit in full lotus because that's Dogen's instructions, and you can't really see under the robe, right? But they take the kyosaku, you know, the stick, and kind of stick it under front of each person's posture, see if their feet are on the floor, which they shouldn't be in full lotus, and kind of like to kind of find out in full lotus, right? So that's like this orthodox Soto Zen kind of like kind of crazy kind of thing, right? But like maybe missing the point of Dogen's teaching. That's one total extreme. You could see the other extreme would be like I think some people I heard that Alan Watts, who was an amazing teacher of Zen, bringing the teaching to the West in early days, I heard that he heard this very story about strike the ox, and the implication is you strike the ox, and as long as you have an understanding, he felt, and I think he did have quite a good understanding, but he said, you don't need to sit Zazen in this posture and like this, you know, long sashins where you don't move. That's craziness. Never sat Zazen. And he became an alcoholic and died young. So that's like the other extreme, right? So we're looking for some middle way.
Well, that's why. I actually appreciated your introduction of the subtle body. Which has a more energetic aspect to it.
Yeah.
For me, the strictly physical posture is, sometimes I call it a stone Buddha. Without that energy, you really do just have a lump of flesh or a lump of stone. So I appreciated the introduction of that chi, the energetic aspect of sitting.
The gross physical posture of seven points of Vajrayana, I think, is designed to get the subtle body flowing freely. But if we miss, and it, so it may naturally happen, but if it doesn't, it's just like, I just have to sit perfectly straight and with a lot of tension to make sure that I don't move, and we're kind of blocking the subtle body, then we're missing the point. Thank you for that. John. You're muted.
Okay, there we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, so just to take the opposite side, not that I can sit full lotus, I don't think it's possible, but I do feel there is something to the posture, like, and when you mentioned, you know, you don't want to take the posture and space out, my personal experience, I'm not sure that's possible. I feel like when I space out, my posture spaces out, and there is something to holding a posture and maintaining meditation. So I just not to discount the possibilities outside of that, but I think there is something to posture. So I'm just gonna counter on that other side.
Yeah, but it supports a kind of presence. I think that's, one might say, I mean, if I had to say why in Japanese Zen is there so much emphasis on the precision of the posture, I think maybe two things. One is this point about subtle body. It really it lines up the channels and winds. And the other is just that, like, it's when it's very precise, it shows when the mind wanders off a little bit or gets tired. And particularly at one point I find really helpful with that is that hand mudra, right? It's resting right over the lower abdomen like that. And often I've noticed that if I start to space out or wander, the first thing to go in the posture is the hand mudra. Like the thumbs will start to like fall apart a little bit, or if my hands are resting on the foot, they'll start to like slide down the foot a little bit. They'll turn crooked. So I think in Zen mind, beginner's mind, Suzuki Roshi emphasizes a lot about this hand mudra. I don't think there's anything, you know, it doesn't have to be that, but there's a lot in holding the hands in this nice circle with the thumb tips just touching enough to hold a piece of paper. Or another one is the thumbs collapse like this when we're starting to, like the circle, the balloon of the mudra starts to collapse. Kind of tired. So yeah, it points that out to us like nothing else maybe can. Kaizen.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it might also be, one of the differences is between a Vipassana session where there's a real openness towards, you might say, whatever you're doing, you standing up, sitting down. But the difference there is that so much of the emphasis is on naming and labeling thoughts and emotions. So in some ways, the specific directions are very specific. And so it gives you a focus that is, in some ways, I wonder, a replacement for that same kind of focus that happens when you have an emphasis on the body, on the posture, and you're kind of not as directive with the mind. you know, your shikantaza, however you might interpret it. I realize there's a lot of ways, but I think of it as a bottom-up kind of approach rather than a top-down. Vipassana being very top-down, being very, there's an emotion, there's a thought, there's a feeling, there's a, you know, in all the different kinds of very specific ways. Whereas in, so anyway, I was just kind of thinking about that.
Also a body posture, and you know, we're talking about zazen, sitting, but in the realm of Zen monastic practice in the monasteries, it's just an extension of this body emphasis of zazen, especially Japanese Zen monasteries. It's like all this ceremonial activity. You could say, well, that's to generate merit, making offerings and so on. And I think that is part of it. But part of it is like, it's a very embodied practice, exactly how you handle the bells and offering vessels and move through the hall during ceremonies. Mine perfectly choreographed. I mean, it's amazing to watch a Zen service in Japan with well-trained monks who just like never miss a beat, right? And I think it's just like bringing the body posture here, we're talking about, into motion and activity in a very exacting way, like choreographed dance, basically, very similar.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.